This is Talking Dirty, Get Gardening's podcast for plant lovers. The video version is available on our Get Gardening YouTube channel, so you can head over there if you want to see our ugly mugs, and there are pictures of the plants there as well. There are full plant lists on our Twitter and Instagram at Get Gardening Now, so go check those out. But without further ado, let's start talking dirty. Hello and welcome to a Talking Dirty East Rusinal Vicarage May special. Over at aforementioned garden, we have Alan Edward Herbert Gray, our happy and very handsome horticulturalist, sporting a tantalisingly turquoise top.
And on this moist Irish day, dare I say, we have thought of Maria Sophia Fridrichsen sitting in her palatial abode in Cambridgeshire, smiling broadly and looking as wonderful as ever. How are you?
I'm all right. In my postage stamp plot, I think we could probably call it. But I'm happy with that at the time being. Let's be honest, I haven't got time to look after anything bigger. If you hear any scrabbling, the dog is making a bed on the sofa next to me. That's a sort of general level of chaos we have in our world, Shays Fridrichsen. But what a time of year it is, Alan. I mean, plants must be in such abundance in your garden at the moment.
Absolutely. I mean, the growth is incredible. Do you know what I noticed yesterday? You and I yesterday, we went to a wonderful Red Cross charity event and they raised an awful lot of money. And we did a Gardener's Question Time together with Bunny Guinness, Joe Sharman.
And Susie.
And Susie Paisley Taylor. Oh, is it? What did I say?
Well, you know, it's funny you should say that. Because rather than try and edit around this, I had to stop and say to her, because I had to introduce you all, heard your name pronounced in every single possible way. Can you tell me how you say your name? So I think Susie Paisley Tyler's name is said in many, many different ways.
Oh, she gets used to it then.
Yes.
Don't you think she had the most marvellous diction when she spoke? But that's not another story. The thing I noticed yesterday driving down to Cambridgeshire was the fact that, you know, you get that initial flush of really, really bright green, and then it gradually gets a little bit darker. And I was driving along the Newmarket bypass and I looked across to my left and there was this field and it was this bright, bright, fresh lime green. And what it was all the barley coming into ear. So it's producing its corn already. Now, when I was growing up, I mean, barley didn't produce ears for corn like that until July or even August. That's how the plant breeders have manipulated everything, because people don't need the straw because they don't have the cattle anymore. So they engineered the barley to grow much shorter stalks and bigger ears, but much earlier. Fascinating.
Yeah, very clever. I certainly know from my limited weeding time that the weeds have been growing with just as much vigour as the plants, with all the wet and then all the warm. Of course, we have had plenty of dry as well. So I assume you've been watering like billy-o in your garden.
Well, we have a little bit, but I mean, we have a system of drip hoses and these go on a regular basis about once every fortnight. And surprisingly, we had all that rain in the winter and spring and it was just wet everywhere. Pap, pap, pap. You know, all the paths were squishy and everything. And within a week, you need to water again. And especially when you do lots of new planting. We've got several areas we've rejuvenated over the course of the winter. And all the new planting in there, it really does need water. Otherwise, it kind of nips up and sits there looking all tight. It gazes at you reproachfully. Come and water me.
It's been busy today because we had a little chat before we ever managed to record this. We were waiting on a baby going to sleep, or a toddler, I suppose he is these days.
Oh, by the way, it's not mine.
Alan's got a secret toddler too. So you've been very busy renewing some of your containers.
Yes, we're actually taking out the spring bedding. I mean, the tulips have gone over now. The wallflowers are still flowering, but, you know, there comes a cut-off point. You just have to do it. So I apologise to any visitors that come to the garden and they see the containers sitting there empty, but they're full of the most wonderful soil. If they'd like to examine that and run their fingers through it, I know they won't, because people go, I'm not touching that. They will find it's full of wonderful stuff, we call it here. It's quite an operation, actually, because it's a much needed one, because the greenhouse where we overwinter our big plants like the big Brugmansias and the solanums and fuchsias and various other things, they were stuffed full. And of course, you know, every week that they stay in there, they put on 2 or 3 inches more growth, which means they're getting, well, they're crowding everything out, including themselves, really. So it's with a welcome relief that we are full staff today and the boys are humping like mad, I have to say.
And that's why it's called Talking Dirty. So what are you planning for your containers after you've filled them full of wonderful soil?
Well, we have the standard. You are naughty. We have the standard Brugmansias, and it's fascinating to me because every year I feel surprised that this bunch of twigs on a stick with very few leaves on the top, they're standards, and they go out at about probably 8 feet tall. And I mean, it's amazing to me that there they are, this skeletal form with a few leaves on the top. They haven't got any flowers on at the moment, but in October, September and October, they will have upwards of 250 flowers open on each one at their peak blooming season. And Brugmansias are strange things, but they flower in waves. It's as if they sort of give all their energy out into producing masses of flower, and then they think, oh, I need a rest. And so they have a little rest and recover, put on a little bit more growth, new shoots, new flower buds, and then the show starts again. But it's a little bit bigger each time, a little bit better each time. So that's why by the end of October, there are so many flowers there. But the answer to that, the trick is, I think, there may be people who disagree with me, but I don't care. It seems to work for us. We feed all our containers, our summer flowering containers, we feed them at every watering, and that's roughly every 2 days. It can be more in hot weather. And if we have to give extra water, we don't give extra feed, but we feed every 2 days, but at half strength. And that means that there is a continuous supply of nutrients going to the plant. So it's getting its food as much as it needs all the time throughout the summer.
What your Brugmansias, whenever we post photos of them when they're at their absolute peak and pomp, people always say, oh, you know, mine has five flowers on it. And you've obviously shared the secret to the feeding there. But at what stage in your horticultural career and life did you really crack Brugmansias? Because they've become a real signature plant at East Drustenall Vicarage. Everybody goes away at that time of year with a photo of either just the plant or themselves betwixt the pair of stunning brugs that you have by the tea room. And yeah, at what stage did they become a signature plant?
They became a signature plant when the first time I ever went to the Mediterranean, I went abroad for a summer holiday once, and I saw them growing, and they were trees. And I didn't, I'd never somehow thought about them as being trees. Granny grew them years ago, and I mean, she had them in a big pot, and they were about, I don't know, a metre tall maybe. And if we got five flowers on, we oodin' hard over it. And then we used to walk past it in the evenings because it emits this wonderful aroma, this lovely scent. And then I saw them growing on the continent, and they were trees. And I thought, that's what I want. I want to be able to look up into those trumpets, and I want to be able to walk beneath them on a warm summer evening and inhale that lovely aroma. That was the moment I thought, well, we've got to grow these in whopping great containers, which we have. And I mean, as a plant, it's an ugly plant. I mean, the foliage has no grace to it whatsoever. It's not even shiny. It's kind of dull, and it's got a funny sort of leathery, not leathery, sort of a Hessian type texture to it. It's rough. It is the flowers that are overwhelming. And I think, you know, that was the moment for me when I saw them on the continent, full of flower. They looked miserable in the day, in the hot sunshine. They wilt like anything. And I think that's the nature of the plant, because in the evening, suddenly they come alive and the aroma is released. The foliage perks up and looks wonderful. And I just thought, we need to have that at home.
Yeah. And so when did you manage to achieve it? What can you remember? How long ago do you think it was that you were like, right, I have managed to bring to reality this dream that I had on a sunny summer holiday in the Med?
Well, probably 35 years ago, I suppose, since I grew them as really big flowering plants. I've tried all of them, in actual fact. Well, I say all of them, I tried a lot of them. There's white flowered forms, there are apricot flowered forms, there's lemon flowered forms, and there's white flowered forms. There's doubles and singles of each, and I've tried them all. And for me, it's the one called Grand Marnier. It's nothing to do with it, I don't think, but it's called Grand Marnier. And it is that lovely sort of apricot-y colour. And it's that one that I actually think does better for me. I find the white one's very, very prone, especially in the glasshouse, to attacks of red spider mite, which is very difficult to deal with. The best way of dealing with it is to keep the atmosphere as moist as possible. So you can imagine in a hot, dry summer, they just run riot. And the pink one is not vigorous enough. It doesn't produce enough flowers. And so it's the apricot one that I stick with, actually. I've got plants of the others, but, you know, sometimes I put them out and sometimes I don't bother.
I love that Alan has been living the dream for 35 years. I mean, 50 if you include the whole garden, but 35 if you just include your Brugmansia dreams. At this time of year, what I find really exciting is when things start to flower that you've been waiting for, or things start to germinate that you've been waiting on. Is there anything that's happened over the last kind of couple of weeks or so that has really made you stop and go, oh, yes?
Yeah, there's a couple of things in actual fact. And one of them is that I was sowing zinnia seeds. And I said, I told Ian I was going to order some new zinnia seed, you see. And I knew that I had some, and he'd sorted through all the seed packets. And there are many, I have to say. It's ridiculous, really, but there you are. And found the zinnias and put them out for me to sow. And I thought, well, he's made the effort. Now that's my turn to make the effort. So I put the zinnia seed in and I covered it with vermiculite, which I use to cover all my seeds with, instead of soil, because lots of seeds need light to aid germination. And lo and behold, 2 days later, there were seedlings popping through. Now, that's a very, very short time, and I was very surprised. There's one tray that hasn't come up, though, so that they have not germinated. So that obviously the seed is no good on that one. But you can usually judge some of these plants, you know, they pop up as quick as anything. Morning glories, for instance, you know, morning glories. And Mina lobata, that lovely little climber that's orange and yellow and cream, and it looks like bunches of bananas, the flowers do. I mean, if you soak the seed of those and soak them overnight, and if you will notice a change in their little black seeds, and they come out of their packet and they don't look like anything at all. And morning glory seeds especially, they kind of erupt overnight, and the seeds kind of swell. And what you're doing is you're making the germination much quicker by putting some water into that embryonic seed, and you're starting its life journey. So it's giving birth on your petri tray overnight in a little bit of water. and then you just sow it the next morning, and then 3 or 4 days later, up they pop.
At the zinnias, are you going for your Benary Giants?
I have gone for Benary Giants, yes, I have. I've gone for them. One of the packets I sowed was mixed colours, because we've got a bed in the vegetable garden where we've taken out a hedge. And I thought that it was a division between two parts of the vegetable garden. And it was our original boundary hedge. And I took it out, we took it out, and we just made a narrow bed then, because it's flooded the area with light. And it's such an improvement. It's unbelievable. And so I put four little fruit trees in there, miniature fruit trees. They're actually proper varieties, two pears and two plums. And they came from Otter Farm, Mark Diacono at Otter Farm down in Devon. Who is a very good source of unusual plants, I have to say, unusual vegetables. And he's the man that has this wonderful idea of making a forest that you harvest from. I don't know, you know.
Yeah.
That's a lovely idea. So you're walking through the forest, and on the understory, where you've got part shade, you've got raspberries growing. And, you know, you just pick, if the birds don't get there first, of course. So we've got those, and we've got some, you know, just sort of the odd plant that I've got ones of. And there's not many that I got ones of, but, you know, sometimes somebody brings you something and you think, oh, I need to bulk that up. Well, that's the place I plant it, and then I can divide it the years following. I had a lovely Montana, Centaurea Montana flowered this morning, which was lovely. Very, very pale one. Granny Gray's stock is in there, because I save seed of that every year. Catenanchi, I don't know whether I'm saying that right, but Catenanchi cerulea.
Oh, we actually sowed. I never know how to say that.
No, he sowed an old packet of seed of that, and they all germinated. So I pricked them out and put those in there. We'll see how they do. It's a kind of testing ground, and it's a bit like it's a bit like a box of frogs. You know, you get something, a little bit of everything. A dog's breakfast, perhaps we'll call it, shall we?
I do love both cerulea and the alba. Because the white catenach, whatever, wherever we're going to say it, it almost has, doesn't have like a little purple center to the flower. And they're so long lasting. And then when they dry up, they actually look quite sort of silvery and nice, those little sort of leftover bits.
Lourdes, perhaps we could do an interactive thing with people who may look at this little thing we're filming here today. Because, you know, I've always sort of thought any Latin name with an or plant name with an E on it, you pronounce the E. So that's why I say Catananchi.
Yeah.
Or Catananchi.
That does sound fun.
I don't know how you say it, but it'd be interesting to hear what people say. But as in Paisley Tyler, it's said and pronounced in many, many ways.
I quite like it pronouncing the E like it's ye oldie shoppy. I mean, Latin is old.
Yeah, it is. Absolutely.
Makes sense. I do love that, Catanache. Actually, I haven't peeped to see if mine is there in the front garden still. But what I have noticed, actually, I mean, this is an East Ruston special, but because my Stachys hasn't flowered yet, it's still, my front garden's still looking all right. It hasn't gone totally to pot. It just goes chaotic Stachys pink flowers and ruins the colour scheme. But at the moment, I've got that lovely Alströmeria dark foliage of Indian summer against the silver of the Stachys. And then my Euphorbia Ascot Rainbow's just reverted, I think. Is it Martinii? Anyway, it looks lovely.
To be quite honest, I think that's the best thing it can do.
Yes.
I loathe it.
Oh, you're
I
not a fan.
No, I think I find the variegation on that is just too hectic.
Well,
it
is
looks
a bit
to me
hectic.
Like a plant. It looks to me like a plant that's been inadvertently sprayed with weed killer.
This is so funny because I've been trying to remember who it was who didn't like Ascot Rainbow. Didn't think it was you. I saw it a couple of years back in Brian Ellis's garden, and I said, "Oh, I'm glad you grow this because I thought I was vulgar for liking it." And but it's all right because now I've got Brian on my side, and whoever else grows Ascot Rainbow, I don't have to worry that Alan can't stand it. Maybe
no,
it is vulgar, but that's fine.
Don't misunderstand me. I don't think it's vulgar. What offends me is the amount and the state of that variegation. I shall do a Bally Guinness. I'll contest that.
Yes. It was brilliant when we did this panel, this kind of gardener's question time for charity. And Bunny is wonderfully controversial, so she'll contest anything. And she knows her stuff. She's done her research. So go check out her YouTube channel and her new podcast as well, audio and
yeah,
or
she's
videos and
absolutely
stuff.
brilliant at it.
She is.
And as a gardener, a writer and a broadcaster, I've told her this to her face. I think she's absolutely admirable because she imparts the kind of information we want to know. We want to know where you can get something. We want to know how much it is. We want to know how much you have to buy of it. And she furnishes you with all that information, which is, I think, very important.
We'll return to Bunny when it comes round to my FLOMO. But your glass houses, I mean, you mentioned changes that have happened in the veg patch, which is right near a couple of your kind of main show glass houses. Like you've got your little veg one near the veg plot and you've got the one in the walled garden. Yeah. And often you have, particularly in the one in the walled gardens, nice things on display, whether they're pelargoniums or, you know, whatever bulb might be in flower. So
yeah,
what's going on in there at the moment?
It's full of pelargoniums, in actual fact, but I said to Graham the other day, you know, my potting shed is one side of the wall and that greenhouse glass house is the other side of the wall. And I really feel that I ought to have that glass house as a propagation house. I don't mind having four or five pots of really nice ornamentals in it. And at the moment, we've got chairs in it and in inclement weather, it's a nice place for people to sit. Well, they're going to be banished because the chairs are going because it's an invaluable space. It's not heated, but it's on south-facing wall. But it's an invaluable space. You know, when you've got masses and masses of plants that you're raising from seed, and I mean, today I'm pricking out all these seedlings, masses of them. Some are, I have to say, a little bit neglected. But plants like amaranthus, which is the if you like, relatives of Love Lies Bleeding, for people who don't know the range of plants that amaranthus covers, they are very forgiving. I'm doing one at the moment called, would you believe it, Velvet Curtains.
Oh, Velvet Curtains. Lovely. I haven't grown amaranthus for a few years, but they're very satisfying to grow. I've never eaten them, but it's always nice to know you could if you wanted to.
Well, it's added to soya or soya is made from it or something.
I never know, but it's, it
it's
looks tasty enough, doesn't it?
It's a kind of flower, isn't it, that's made from them.
Well, I tell you what, I mean, amaranthus edible. I'm going to certainly be able to add a lot of flowers to my pims or my salads because, of course, as we all knew, the borage crop is coming on nicely on my allotment after I sowed some last year. And we said I'd have it forevermore, and so would my neighbours. Well, I haven't checked my neighbours' plots yet, but I have a nice crop of self-sown borage. I'm very happy about it because, to be honest, I haven't got much time to grow anything. So anything that self-seeds.
Well, I saw a huge clump of that beside somebody's gate the other day, and I thought, you're going to rue the day you let that grow there, because
I love it
does seem somewhat incontinently,
it
I'm
does
afraid.
well but so I mean I'm particularly, I mean, this is a genuine point, when I've got very little time to do anything, the self-sowers are really helping me out. I'm leaving my coriander to flower, not only because I actually think it's a really pretty flower. I never appreciated this sort of dusky pinkish of the coriander. And obviously the insects love it. And if it self-sows, I'll have more coriander.
I think all of those umbellifers, they all fit in with the modern idiom of flower arranging, if you like, which is light and airy and see-through, and they fit that image, and I think people are probably appreciating and seeing this in a new light in that respect. I'll tell you one little self-sowing thing that I discovered it this morning. I have a pot, and in this pot is an Edicium, a ginger, and also in the pot was a stray seedling of a white Begonia evansiana, and it's a deciduous thing, so that plant you can't see at the moment, but in between the rhizomes of the ginger there's lots of little seedlings coming up. But I hadn't noticed that beside the path in the greenhouse, there's a flag path, stone path, there was a little at that, and then the membrane, there's a little gap of soil, and it was packed with seedlings. So I pricked those out this morning, and I think I got 54 little plants. So that's a freebie, isn't it? You know, and I haven't had to worry about it.
And they're the ones with the red underside to the leaf?
Yes.
Yeah, lovely
absolutely.
Leaves.
Yeah. I mean, if it didn't have a flower, it doesn't matter. I mean, we've got the pink flowered form, and we've got the white flowered form, obviously. But the white one, I think, is kind of especially ethereal. It's lovely. And there's there's another begonia, which is like a larger version of that. I bought 5 plants last year, fiendishly expensive, of course, because it was new. And where these particular begonias, they have in the leaf axle, they have a little pip that forms, and that little pip is a cormlet, if you like. So that will be next year's plant when it falls to the ground and roots. And so I picked all these off this brand new begonia, and I've got 3 trays of that as well. I was rather pleased about that. So we can have, you know, lots of that.
No wonder you need another propagation greenhouse. Is there anything you've sown that you are waiting on? Is there anything you're kind of excited about that you're trying?
I've sown again poor man's orchid, Schizanthus. Yes. I sowed that, two varieties of that. I don't know whether they'll be that much different. They're all mixed colours. Mm-hmm. One is Dr. Badger's hybrids and one is something else. And I think I'm waiting to see what they do, because Schizanthus, they make lovely pot plants in greenhouses. The flowers are a little bit too delicate to go outside on an average English summer, because they get spoilt by the rain. But they make lovely fillers for the greenhouse, you know, for the summer. So I'm trying those and see what's going to happen there. What else is? I tell you what else has surprised me. I found an old carrier bag full of seed. It kissed me over the garden gate, Persicaria orientale, and I just chucked some seed in a seed tray with some compost, put some vermiculite over it. And I got quite a nice little crop, thank you very much. So I'm rather pleased about that. But this, whereby I saw a seed strain of it in a seed catalogue, and it was, they'd called it pink pearls or red pearls or something like that. Not a single one of those has germinated in exactly the same conditions.
Oh,
and
dear.
I have to say that some of these, it's a fact of life, I suppose. It's something we have to accept. But, you know, when seed companies who have vast array of varieties, they don't grow all those seeds themselves. They rely on people to send the seed in. And if that seed hasn't been kept under optimum conditions, it can deteriorate and become useless. And I'm afraid we've had several of those this year.
Yeah. Just to go back to the idea of what you're waiting on, I thought I'd had a really great idea at the allotment, and I thought I'll have this wonder, because I knew a lot of the borage would self sow, particularly along the edge where I'd grown them. And I thought, well, I'll put a load of ladybird poppies and things along the edge so that I get this lovely mix of red and blue. It'll be beautiful. Sow them in the autumn. I forgot that there are obviously a lot of corn poppies at the allotment, and so and I don't know, maybe if you're cleverer than me you can spot the difference, but I've ended up having I've been having to leave so many seeds and things behind, seedlings behind, because I don't know what they are. So I'm waiting to see if I have an exclusive raft of corn poppies, or if any of them are other poppies that I sowed irritatingly close to where all the corn poppies seed in from the edge, you know, when it goes a bit long, because I'm not, you know, on top of strimming and stuff all the time. So maybe there'll be some amazing grey, and maybe there'll be a load of ladybird poppies, or maybe I will just have a fine, fine crop of corn poppies. Only time will tell.
Well, you know, you have to be like the Reverend Shirley, who introduced the Shirley poppy. And what he did was he rogued out all the red seedlings of the ordinary corn poppy. He noticed one of them was slightly different. So he rogued out all the red ones. So every morning he used to go and look at his little patch, and he pulled out all the red ones and left the other colours. And gradually, over time, the next generation of seed produced a lot more different colours, and so on and so forth. And they got paler and paler and paler as time went on. So it's a nice thing to do.
Well, it is. Unfortunately, I'll probably be roguing out 99.9% of mine. But you never know. One or two of them might be something I actually plan to be there. Now, I know you need to run and have your lunch, because it's ended up being that time of day. And we have FLOMO to fit in. So FLOMO, that fear of missing out you get about a flower or a plant. And we got asked a question at this Gardener's Question Time charity event for the Red Cross at Longstow Hall about an exciting plant that you know, wanted to try, basically a FLOMO style thing, something you had tried or wanted to try. And Bunny Guinness mentioned a tulip, which I immediately had to come home and Google. And it was Tulipa Purple Doll. And she couldn't at the time think of what it was a sport of. I don't know why we all didn't just shout Doll's Minuet, because it's probably the most obvious thing. And it is a sport of Doll's Minuet, which is obviously that kind of magentary, green streaked, lovely kind of lily flowered tulip. And so this is a purple version. So imagine that lovely darker purple with that green sort of flaming. That sounds marvellous. And I don't really go much for tulips at the moment, but I think I might have to try that when I put a bulb order in. It sounds absolutely marvellous. Where are you at with your FLOMO, Alan?
Oh, my FLOMO. Well, it just goes on and on and on, I suppose. There's hardly a day goes by when I don't. I'm going to go backwards to a long time ago. You know, there's that lovely little climbing rose that we grow, which is called Pompon de Paris.
Yes.
It's a 19th century rose. And the thing is, it has lovely little cabbagey pink blooms, but everything about it is on the small side. So it has small leaves, and you think of it as being a delicate little thing. But Graham has one planted in the Californian border behind the desert, and it's 30 feet up an alder tree. And all you see, if you look up, I mean, most people don't look up. They don't look up at all. That's what people, you just don't do. You see this cloud of pink blossom at the top of this tree. It's absolutely incredible. But years ago, there was a bush version of this. This is obviously a climber. And for such a miniature looking plant, it's obviously quite a vigorous climber, you know, because it goes all the way up there. And there was a bush version of it. And I'd love to know whether there still is. I think there's some kind of, it's like a historic rose thing in France. I must get in contact with Michael Marriott, because I know that he knows about it. And you can actually ask them if they know of any existing plants of this variety. But that'd be nice. It'd be nice to find it, I think.
And if anyone has not seen the rose special we did with Michael Marriott, I'll link to that in the video version. Wonderful.
Yeah.
Wonderful roses, obviously worked at David Austin for a very long time and knows his stuff. And if you didn't know, by the way, David Austin was Bunny Guinness's uncle, I think.
So yes.
Go round
yes.
in a weird, small world, full circle
totally
kind of way.
Sounds doesn't it? Ideal for talking dirty, as you say.
Yes. Alan, I know it's only a little tiny insight into the wonders of East Ruston Old Vicarage. Of course, you are open Wednesday to Sunday, bank holiday Mondays, yeah. Guided tours on Thursdays if they're not sold out. So people, if they are lucky enough to be able to get over to the east coast of Norfolk on the east coast of England, then they should come and visit you, because you really can't believe it until you see it.
Well, that's a bit true, I think. I'll have to agree with you there. And do you know, Thordis, as I speak, the sun is just peeping through the clouds.
Marvellous. We'll release you to go out and enjoy some actual rays of sunshine in your garden. Thank you very much. Until next time, everybody, happy gardening.
Happy gardening, everybody. Bye-bye.
Hey, Thordis here. Just to say thank you so much for listening to Talking Dirty. You are now officially our favourite person. If you really liked it, please do subscribe, because we'll be back for more plant-loving mayhem next week. And as you're our new favourite person, we don't want you to miss out. If you've got a question for Alan and the experts, you can email it to hello@getgardeningnow.co.uk. So happy gardening, and we'll see you, oh favourite person, next time.